Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
VoiceOver Coffee Shop, Episode 63.
Welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we share our morning with some of the finest names in voiceover. And now, here's your host, voice actor Andrew Morrison.
Hi there, my name is Andrew Morrison, and welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we start our day with some of the finest names in voiceover. If you'd like to get to know me a little bit better, you can check out my website at andrewdmorrison.com. From monsters, transformers, and generals, oh my. In this episode, I've brought in a super good friend, the notorious Rick Sellers. With 25 years of experience under his belt, Richard Sellers has done it all. He's voiced hundreds of television and radio commercials, audiobooks, toys, on-hold messaging, radio imaging, and so much more. He's the voice of the general from the insurance commercials, and likely most of the toys from your childhood. In this episode, we talk about voicing some of the world's most famous toys, audition rejection versus selection, and how monster noises are made. How are you doing today, Rick?
I am doing well. How are you?
I am doing amazingly. So how do you take your coffee in the morning?
I actually have it in my Primo Demos cup, and I am drinking it with cream. Yeah, cream. So I'm a cream and sugar guy.
Gotcha. Okay. Any special flavor creamer you prefer, or just plain?
I like hazelnut. I like French vanilla. My girlfriend is a big coffee aficionado, so she drinks the Keurig. Yeah, she drinks the Keurig. It is mahogany from Caribou.
Okay.
And you can't really get it in Ohio, but unless you order online, but that stuff is delectable. So if you're a coffee snob, try it. It's really, really, really good.
I'm gonna have to give that a shot. So how did you get wrapped up in the voiceover industry? What's kind of your origin story?
Okay, my origin is I was a commercial artist. I was a commercial artist for about 12 years. Mostly what I did was a lot of toy design. I worked for Mattel, Hasbro, Cap Toy, a couple other people in between. And we would design concepts based on their ideas for mostly at boys action figures. That was my kind of specialty. Okay. So I did a lot of vehicle design, a lot of monsters, a lot of heroes, kind of comic booky type stuff.
Okay.
And when I would work in-house, I was all freelance, but when I would come into, let's say, American Greetings, they had a toy division at that time called TCFC. They did Mad Balls, Popples, My Pet Monster, all kinds of crazy stuff. Strawberry Shortcake, Care Bears, that was all them. And I would work in-house, which meant they would pay me for the day to come in, sit at the table and draw. And while I was in there, I would do crazy voices, monster sounds, all kinds of fun stuff. It was just my natural, that's how I roll.
Right.
And some of the head guys, I think the vice president and the president of the company, happened to walk by the cubicle and they're like, who's that guy doing those crazy sounds? And they walked over and talked to me and they're like, dude, this is amazing. How long have you been doing this? I'm like, since I was a kid. They're like, would you be interested in providing narration for our video presentations for other toy companies, stuff that they were pitching to Mattel or Hasbro or whomever. Right. And I said, how much does it pay? And they went, cha-ching. And I went, okay, I'm on board with that. So that's how that all worked out. I began doing essentially industrial videos or presentation videos where I would do the voiceover for the product. Yeah, I think the very first one I did was a toy called Freaky Creature Eggs, and they were creature eggs that you would crack open. They had goo in them. I remember.
Yeah.
And they had a toy. It did very well in Europe. I don't know if it ever came out in the States, but it did very well overseas. So that was the first one. And then after that, I was just doing all kinds of stuff. And then I went and cut my very first demo at a place called Magnetic North. Okay. It was in some guy's basement. Chris Keffer was the engineer back then. That had to be 30 years ago. And I cut the demo. It was a character voice demo. So it was me doing all kinds of character voices.
Right.
Scooby-Doo, Shaggy, anybody you can think of. And I began sending that demo out. That would have been 1995. To various advertising agencies in the Cleveland, Ohio area or Cleveland area. And I got a call like the next day from Safeman and Richards, who were located in Beechwood. They were a pretty fancy, smancy advertising agency, and they had just gotten the account for the General.
Okay.
This would have been 1998, I think, right yeah. around there. And they got my demo, and the woman called me. She was the head of the creative department, and I think her name was Elizabeth. I can't remember now, Richard something. But anyway, she called and said, we got your demo. We love it. Can you do Yosemite Sam? And I went, oh, you dead burn galoot. And she went, can you be here tomorrow at 1 o'clock? And I went, okay. That's awesome. I still didn't know what it was for. And then I walked in, went up to the offices, and they're like, we have a new character for the General Insurance Company. It's a little mascot. We want him to sound kind of like Yosemite Sam. We want you to sing the jingle, and we want you to do 4 radio spots and 3 or 4 TV spots, and we'll pay you this much money. And I went, I was trying to keep my cool, but I had never made that kind of money before. And I went, okay, I'll do it. And so that was it. I signed the contract, and they put me in the booth, and I began doing the thing. And I had never sung professionally before. Mm-hmm. So to do the jingle, that was a separate day. That was actually written by George Sipple, who is a local composer. And I went to his studio. Mm-hmm. And again, I'd never sung professionally. I didn't know how to do it. So they had the microphone set up. There was all kinds of executives in the room. The engineer was in the room. He's an experienced musician and writer. So he was looking at me, and he's going, okay, when I hit the button, you jump in. And he did it like 4 times, and I'm just looking like I was like a deer in the headlights. I didn't know what to do or when to come in. And finally, I go, thinking quickly, I saw all the execs all sweating and getting nervous. And I'm like, just point your finger at me when it's time for me to sing it. And so he hit the music, he cued me in, and I did it, and that was that. So that was all the way back in 1998-ish, I think. That was the original jingle. And then it's been rewritten since then and re-recorded. I think 2003, we redid it. But yeah, that's how it all began. And then I began working because I was a freelancer and a toy designer, I had contacts at toy companies, including Hasbro.
Were you a freelancer as a toy designer, or was that like yep. an actual? Okay, gotcha. Nope. Cool.
Yeah, we had a studio called, I had like 4 or 5 partners that were all tremendous illustrators and concept designers. Jim Grohman, Jim Wampler, Jim Elliott, they were all Jim Moravik, and myself. And we did freelance work. We were Morningstar Art Services back then. Then it became Zillion Concepts. And I did that for about till probably around 2004, 2005. Mm-hmm. And then I went full time into voice work. So I was doing lots of local spots, lots of pizza places, car dealerships, pawn shops, a little bit of everything. And slowly I began to build and build and build. And then once the General spots were running regularly, and they weren't national at that time, they were regional. Mm-hmm. But that was enough to get me on the map. And then I started getting phone calls, doing more toy work, doing more commercial work, And it just kind of escalated from there. And I've always loved it. I always wanted to do it. I mean, when I was five, I would watch Bugs Bunny cartoons, big bowl of cereal sitting in front of the TV and just
Right.
imitate Bugs Bunny and
Yeah.
whomever. So I was a natural mimic. And that helped me tremendously because I could sound like celebrities, cartoon characters. And if they were looking for somebody that could do a sound-alike voice, that's a pretty big gig in the toy world.
Yeah.
If they need somebody to sound like Tim Allen, or in my case, Peter Cullen, from the Transformers. Peter is the voice of
Of
Optimus
Optimus
Prime. He
Prime,
has
yeah.
been since 1984. And I forget how old he is now. He's probably in his l early 80s. But they had me imitate him for the electronic toy line for Hasbro. So I did all the Transformer Optimus Prime voices. Then I began doing
That's
Bumblebee,
cool.
then Megatron. Yeah, pretty much everybody in the franchise. And I think I had a blast doing it. And I just had a natural gift to mimic those actors that they couldn't afford to pay to do the voice for the toy,
Right.
but I got to do them. And then eventually they had me supervise a recording session out at Dave and Dave Recording in LA with Peter Cullen for Hasbro.
That's
No
cool.
Hasbro people were around. It was only me and Wes. And yeah, we got to do a 2-hour session with Peter Cullen where he was doing all the promos for Toy Fair across the world, Toy Fair New York, Toy Fair Germany, Toy Fair everywhere, and including a lot of product for them as well, electronics voices where they really wanted Peter Cullen. And he was a champ. He plowed through it. I mean, we had a 2-hour session and he didn't take a break, didn't need one. I'm like, Peter, you need a break? I'm fine. I'm like, okay, very good. But he was a very, very nice man. And I really wanted to do my Optimus Prime for him, but I thought he might go, "You're taking food from the mouths of my children." And I'm like, eh, maybe I better not do that. So I didn't do it. But what a great guy. What a fun time. And yeah, just you can find the video on YouTube. It's up somewhere. So
Yeah.
anyhow, that's it. It was just one thing led to another. But you have to be, if you want to be a voice actor, you've got to be in it for a while and you better
Right.
love it
Oh,
because you're
yeah.
going to get a lot of rejection. A lot of people aren't used to that. They don't like auditioning, never hearing anything. I don't like it either, but it's just the nature of the beast. You do 1,000 auditions, maybe you get one gig. So it's very, very time consuming. Depending on how you do your auditions, when you do stuff, are you kind of taking breaths out and making sure it's perfect, or are you just recording it, sending it off, and done with it?
I just record it and send it off because I well depending. So depending on what I'm doing, if it's for like a small production company, then I'll generally take the breaths out because they want to hear what it sounds like on the final spot. If it's for a bigger production company, a lot of times leaving those breaths in, it gives it more life and so they can kind of connect with it more. But I don't look at it as
Right.
rejection. And that was a big mindset shift for me maybe about 2 years ago. Where when I stopped looking at it as I'm getting rejected and more looking at it as a selection process. Because if I think about
Well,
there, no
exactly.
casting directors going and saying, oh no, I reject you, I reject you. They're looking for who they
No.
feel like is authentically that voice. And so they
A
could have
particular
10,
character voice.
right, and they could
Yeah,
have
they're looking for. Go ahead.
Yeah, they could have like 10 people that they think is like, oh no, these guys would be perfect for what we're doing, but they can only select one. You know what I mean? That doesn't
Exactly.
mean you weren't good enough for the job. And so every audition that I put out, I think of it as I'm doing the actual job itself. Because I mean, I want if I wasn't the right fit for this, I still want that casting director to remember me for a potential thing that I might be a good fit for.
Very good. Yeah, that's the way to look at it. Otherwise, if you think of it as rejection, and many people do, it just becomes incredibly disappointing. But if you do it and you turn it in and forget about it, that's what I always tell people. That's the best way to handle it
Yeah.
because either you're going to get it or you're not. But don't call the casting agent. Don't call your agent. Don't ask,
No.
qu did I get that job? Because I've been waiting. I haven't heard anything. You're not going to unless you got the gig.
Right.
So it's as simple as that. And for your own mental health, your thoughts are the way to go. Just do it. If you don't get it, it's not a rejection of you. It's just that somebody else was closer to what they were imagining in their head.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very good.
And now I have a bunch more voiceover questions for you, but I'm curious, what was the process of like working as a freelancer for toy design? I'm just really curious about that. What was that like?
Well, we had a studio, so we would get an email from the client. It could have been Hasbro, it could have been Mattel, it could have been anybody. We did a lot of stuffed animals or plush animals, and those were smaller companies. We'd get an email or a phone call. They would say, I got a project. I need it done by such and such a date. We're looking for sketches initially, and then we'll want you to go to finish. That would be back then we would ink everything with pens and then do marker rendering. So we would, we had markers that we would color everything. Today, everything is done digitally, mm-hmm. but back then that's how it was done. And we would charge accordingly. So depending on how long the job would take to do and who got the gig and if they split it up or they were handling it themselves, that's how it kind of worked. And we built a pretty good reputation getting stuff done on time and doing really good work. And I did enjoy it, but I always knew that for me, voiceover, character voice work was my niche. It was something that I was just born to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got lucky and finally figured it out. It took me a long time. I was 40 before I really realized that's what I want to do. I love this girl, but I want to marry that one. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
And you've been pretty prolific in toys. What's like an archetype that you've always like wanted to voice that you haven't done yet?
I've done pretty much everything from cute characters to heroic characters to, you know, really that's the sort of width and breadth of toy for at least for boys action is right. Mostly heroic and kind of G.I. Joe-esque.
Right.
So I got to do some G.I. Joe stuff. I got to do some major power stuff. That line didn't that's last cool. long, but I got to do it.
I remember that. Yeah.
And a ton of Transformer stuff and Star Wars. I think one of the very first jobs I got to do for Hasbro was for the Star Wars team. And they were looking for a Ewan McGregor VO or sound alike for Obi-Wan Kenobi, electronic battling Obi-Wan Kenobi. This was 2002.
Okay.
It would coincide with the release of Clone Wars. And I knew right away I could do it, but they didn't tell me it was Ewan McGregor. So I was doing it as Alec Guinness. So okay. I got the script and I'm going, I was once a Jedi Knight, say it was your father. And then they contacted me like, no, not Alec. That was great. But not Alec. We want you to do young Obi-Wan. I went, okay, hello there. And then so I began doing it. And they also had Jango Fett. And they had an actor picked out for him, but I wanted it. So I went ahead and did some Jango Fett too. They heard mine. And whoever was the creative director on that went, get that guy. So I got the gig to do both of them. So I did electronic battling Obi-Wan Kenobi and electronic battling Jango Fett. I still have the figures. The batteries don't work anymore. Those are 2002. So they don't talk, but every now and then I'll pick them up and play with them. I'm a Jedi Knight. I'm going to take you down. So sorry about that. I got a phone call coming in.
No worries. But
yeah, that was the very first thing I did. Then the Star Wars team found out about me. So at Hasbro. And then anytime they needed something, Jabba the Hutt or whatever, or any of the bounty hunters, any of that stuff, I got to do it. So it was quite a bit of fun. And I'm a huge Star Wars geek. I don't know if you're a fan or not.
I am. Yes.
Okay. I'm more of a fan of the original trilogy, so when I was doing Jango Fett, in fact, the voice sounds like the original voice actor was Jason Wingreen for Boba Fett. And I thought, well, Jango Fett is a clone. Wait a minute. Boba is a clone of Jango. And I thought they must sound like. So I did mine like Jango Fett from the original trilogy.
Okay.
And then they reached out and they go, now we're doing the Tamara Morrison version. I went, okay. So I had to, but it was too late. The code had already been sent to China, which meant all the information that was going to be put burned onto the chip as the voice of Jason Wingreen. So if the old original Boba Fett, so if you pick up the Jango Fett and press the button, it sounds like Jason Wingreen from the 1980 film Empire Strikes Back, not from the new ones.
Cool.
And nobody complained. It's just a little bit of trivia that you know and very few other people do.
Yeah.
So
So whenever you're doing like creature work, how are you creating individuality in it? I mean, I know there's only like so many different ways you can voice, like, say, a dinosaur. So, like, how
Well,
are you creating those differences?
I look at the image or the picture. We had to do this for many Hasbro toys. I think we did Stomp and Chomp dinosaurs. There were a whole line for preschool kids. That might have been through play school. And they were big, kind of cuter dinosaurs, but they were still kind of cool. And they wanted them to make like giant stomping sound effects when they would stomp. So we did all the sound effects as well. We created all the walking sounds, the crushing of the brush, eating sounds. I think I did an example of that for the VO Atlanta, where I took a head of lettuce and I went right up to the microphone and I'm going, and that was the sound of eating. We did burping, farting, all that stuff for the dinos. And as far as the roars go, you look at the image of the dinosaur. It's very much like animation. You'll get a model sheet or an image of the character, and then you look at it and determine, is it a big character? Is it a small character? Would you think it would have a big, deep voice or a tiny little voice? And then based on the image, we kind of create the roar sound effects. So oftentimes we'll take animal sound, real animals, tigers, lions, bears, and mix them in with my human dinosaur roars and stuff to create like a hybrid. And then that would be burned onto a chip. Burning onto a chip means that the audio, the information for that audio is put onto an IC chip or an integrated chip. And those toys have a speaker in them. The chip goes in them. Usually it's done in China. And then, or it was, it's been 15 years, but a lot of those sounds are burned onto the chip, put in the toy, and then you'll get like multiple phrases, sometimes music. We write music as well. My partner Wes McCraw is a composer and a musician, so he's able to write. Like for example, they wanted a rock, heavy metal rock version of the Transformers theme, so he did it with heavy electronic guitar, and that's burned onto the chip, and you can hear it when you press the button. So it'll either play the music and then have several phrases or sound effects. Lots of fun stuff, but yeah, I've done a ton of toys, probably 100 toy different types of toys, including novelty toys like Halloween product. You got like a gross voodoo shrunken head ball or something like that, or a pile of dog poop and it makes noises, anything like that. I've done all that stuff. And then I also do a ton of stuff for American Greetings. They have a whole division of audio cards that are a paper card with a sound chip in it. You open it up, and when you do, it triggers it, and the chip will play either music or sound effects or a combination of music, sound effects, and the voice. So I've done talking polar bears, Santa Claus, Donald Trump, all kinds of character stuff for that. Probably over 3,000 cards that if you shop at Target and you really pay attention, you probably could still find a couple of them out there. So, yeah, it's a
Cool.
fun gig. Fun gig.
What's like your favorite or like most unlikely source of inspiration that you've gotten for like a particular sound?
Well, I think Godzilla. I had to, initially, we were doing dinosaur roars, and I happened to stop at a convenience store. I don't know why this happened, but I walked in there and I talked to the attendant. I'm like, "Hey, how's your day going? I'm going to be recording dinosaur noises today." And he goes, "I saw a documentary on Godzilla, how they did the Godzilla roar way back in 54. They had a rusty fence, and the sound effects guy would hear that open every day, and he thought, "That's a cool sound. I'm going to incorporate that into Godzilla's roar so that that became the for Godzilla." And I thought metal sounds could be turned into organic sounds for dinos. And so we began getting squeaks of all kinds of metal things and adding them into the roars. Especially, we did the Dinobot, who's a robot dinosaur. I don't know how familiar you are with Transformers product,
Very
but
much.
okay. The Dinobot, but they wanted it to be not the goofy Dinobot from the cartoon, but the one from the film Age of Extinction. So
he did not talk.
He had roars, sounds, and grunts, and all kinds of cool stuff. But they had to be mechanical and sort of biological. Mm-hmm. And that's where all the sound effects of the fences and the metal scraping, all that stuff came into play, so that we could create various kind of cybernetic dino roars as opposed to a real dinosaur. But it was a lot of fun. A lot of it is just using your imagination and interpreting the art and then figuring out how long the sounds can be. You're limited with a chip, an audio chip, to about 26 seconds max. So it can record 26 seconds of actual audio information. And so you got maybe 10 phrases, maybe a piece of music, some sound effects, things like that. And I'm sure they could do more. It's just more expensive, and they're trying to keep the cost down to be able to sell the toy at a price point. So it's kind of like, you know, form follows function. They got to be able to use it and make it work.
So how can you get the attention of a production house whenever you're submitting for toys stuff? Like whenever people are submitting to you, like what have made people stand out?
Well, in my case, I did not submit to a production company. I was being contacted directly by the toy company, but that's because I had an in.
Right.
And that allowed me to kind of work directly with them as opposed to working with somebody else. Mm-hmm. My suggestion for marketing for new people in particular, people entering the voiceover world, is in the old days, I would pick up the yellow pages. You're probably well past that. But now you can do it digitally. You go on Google production companies or video production companies in your area. You can do it like surrounding tri-state area or whatever. And then you reach out to them individually, very brief, very polite. You can email them, go to their websites. I would do it methodically. I'd go A to Z, go right down the list. You call each one, say, hi, I'm a voice actor. I have whatever amount of years, lie a little bit. I got 5 years in the business. I have a broadcast quality studio in my home. I have Source Connect. I'm able to connect remotely. I'm competitively priced, and I want to work with you. I'm familiar with your product, and I want to work with you.
Well, where would you find production houses specifically specializing in toys?
Now, that's like, different.
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Okay, to find a production, really, you're not going to. If they're doing it internally, I think there's a place called Cakewalk. They're in Texas or around that area. They do a lot of production work for toys. So that's the only real toy company, or if they're still in business, that does specific work for toys. Okay. The rest all do it in-house as much as they can, and they farm out the voices. Or for Hasbro, we did everything. So they would give us a list of 10 different sound effects, power up, power down, explosion, dinosaur getting hit, and then we would create those sounds. But that's something that I love to do. I was into it, so for me it was fairly easy. I could kind of figure out, you know, imagine how it would sound and then kind of recreate that. So I'm not an engineer, but Wes is, so I just tell him, make it more mechanical, or add an EQ, add a little bit of compression here, give me some verb on that, a little delay echo, and then we make it work. So yeah, we work hand in glove. It's a good way. I've worked with him for about 25 years. Very talented musician and engineer, and he's just good at what he does. We have a shorthand together, so you know, it's an easy way to work.
Gotcha. And so you do a lot of coaching now too. Like, what do you specialize in when it comes to your coaching?
Pretty much any genre of VO that you're interested in pursuing, I can help you with. But a lot of it is character voice work or narration demos, commercial work. I do a ton of commercial demos too, because I've been up for multiple Sovos awards for both video game demos, character demos, promo demos, and commercial work as well. So I have a reputation as somebody that knows how to make a good demo, and I enjoy it. People will ask me all the time, your talent, why do you do production? I'm like, yeah, I love doing it. I don't do production. I make sure the engineer knows what I'm looking for, and he manages that. But I enjoy it. It's fun for me. I like working with new people. I like working with new talent. I like being able to coach a performance out of somebody, and kind of train them on how to deliver those lines. And you know, it's a collaborative process. You work with the talent depending on their strength or weakness. And then I like to challenge them and get them to do things that they have not done before. And oftentimes they will find that they can do things they had no idea they could do.
Yeah.
So it's a great learning experience and it's a lot of fun. I try to be, you know, upbeat and peppy and at the same time impart as much information as I can.
So what are some of the most common problem areas that you've seen with students maybe that you've taken on in the past year?
I would say a lot of times delivery, going from the traditional read that we did 20 years ago to the conversational read is a challenge. And they're still doing sort of announcery stuff. Everybody says nothing announcery too slick or polished, but oftentimes you'll end up with something announcery very slick and very polished. So those companies really don't know what they want. They're trying to be politically correct and all inclusive, everyone welcome. And right. We want it to sound not announcery. Announcers are evil and bad. Announcers aren't evil and bad. Those guys were super talented and the best there was. I like to think of them as extraordinary voices, not casual or conversational, but extraordinary. And I still admire those guys. I mean, Paul Frees is one of my favorite voice actors of all time. And that guy could do anything. Characters, he could sing, he could do announcers. So those guys are triple threats. Those guys that can do straight voice, commercial work, character voices, sing, you know. But I would say is a challenge just learning how to deliver the copy that people are looking for today in a friendly, not too polished way. It's a bit of a challenge to figure it out, but you know, a lot of the younger people, new people, they're not familiar with old school announcers. So for them, it's not that difficult to transition. A lot of the older guys are going, Rick, what's going on? What am I doing wrong? And I'm like, you're not doing anything wrong. The market has changed, but everything old is new again. And you'll find it coming back around. Be patient. Don't be afraid. Just hang in there. Things will turn around. And I'm already hearing a shift. I've heard it for probably the past year. So things are changing. The VO world, especially the commercial world, is like an ocean. It's always in motion, always waves going up and down, depending on the political climate, depending on a lot of different variables, but it's always moving and in motion. So you got to pay attention to TV. I love television. I'm an addict. I watch it all the time, and I will look at the commercials because it's my business. I need to know who's getting booked, what voices are getting booked, what ethnicity, male, female, all that comes into play. And all that will inform me on how to kind of move forward with my own career, as well as helping students and other people to kind of find a path that will work for them.
So outside of like the read side of it, like in what other ways have you adapted your business over, say, maybe the past 2 years to kind of stay on top? What other kinds of shifts as far as like maybe marketing or positioning yourself in certain parts of the industry? What other changes have you had to adapt to?
Well, fortunately, I have a reputation and I've been around for a while. I've got three agents. So for me, it's not that challenging. For new people, I would say, I've said this for years, you are going to be your own best agent.
Yes.
If you're on the phone with a client and you know how to sell yourself, you're going to get the gig. You're not going to, you're going to sell yourself. Now you have to be polite. You have to be upbeat. You have to be courteous. You have to make them feel like you are in charge, you're in control, and you're there to help them. You're going to be a problem solver, not a problem. Too often people are like, they have too many questions and they have too, they're uncertain about what file format, all kinds of stuff. You have to be, you have to portray competence. That's what it's all about.
You're there to solve a problem for them. Yeah.
I'm there to solve a problem. I'm going to make your life easy and better. So you want to book me. I'm your guy. I'm your go-to guy. That's the attitude you want to put forward. And you know, if you have that kind of confidence, great. It takes time to learn it, but you can kind of develop it. And I would say take an improv class, take an acting class. Acting is really first and foremost when you're doing voice work. It sounds like it would be funny voices or cute voices or just having
little,
a great voice.
Little V, big A. Yep.
Yeah. But really, it all comes down to acting. Many on-camera guys cannot act for a microphone. They don't know how to do it. because they're not used to using, they're using their body and their face and their eyes to act. And that will work on stage or on film or television, but not with the microphone. You have to learn how to make love to the mic, how to convey whatever that character is, the emotion, and that's really what it's all about. So take an acting class, take an improv class. Improv will help with your kind of ability to jump back and forth between voices or create new voices or come up with new ideas. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been in the booth and the director will remotely often will say, what else you got? You got something else? Got any ad-libs? So many times I will ad-lib lines and I don't get paid for it, but I should. But I will come up with alternate lines that, and many times I'll be like, right, that's great, we could use that. So if you're capable of kind of coming up on with stuff on the fly and you can change it up, if they say, that's too stodgy or that's too kind of authoritarian, can you change the voice a little bit? If you can adapt on the fly, that's going to be beneficial because if they tell you they want something, you kind of got to, they're paying you. It's your job to deliver that.
100%. And so as an award-winning yep. demo producer, what are you doing with, say, video game demos? Like everybody has a different process for demo production, but what are you doing in particular to make your demos more competitive and kind of show what your voiceover artists can fully do? Like, how are you telling that story with them?
I think the advantage I have is that I have done Blue Sky concept work, which Blue Sky means anything goes. You can just create the whole world.
Right.
So when I approach a video game demo, I approach it as almost snippets from a film, and I'll pick multiple genres that are popular in the video game world. So mm-hmm. we'll do combat, we'll do sci-fi, fantasy, whatever the trending video games are at that time, we'll kind of adapt and make work. And we do full production. So every sound effect we labor over, every piece of music we select is really a challenge because we're not just grabbing anything that will work.
Right.
We'll sit and spend half an hour on 1 2-second sound effect. I mean, it's really a labor of love, but video games in particular are a passion for me. Mm-hmm. I love doing it and I love creating those sounds. I mean, you're building a world and you have to make it on that demo. It may not exist in the real world. So you've got to make it come alive for people that are listening. It's got to be compelling, interesting, engaging, and the right length. If you go beyond a minute 30, you're going to lose a lot of casting directors. But if it's really a good demo, you can push it to maybe a minute 40, minute 50, depending on the talent's ability and how good the demo is. But we don't stop with a demo until both the client and we are thrilled. And if we're not thrilled, we're going to start all over. We'll do whatever it takes to make sure that thing sounds spectacular.
Beautiful. So what do you do outside of voiceover? Like what do you do to recharge your batteries? What are things that you enjoy doing?
Honestly, I am obsessed with what I do. So I don't do anything. Mm-hmm. I literally will watch television or read. I like comics. I like sci-fi. But really, my passion is voice acting. So that's it. That's what I love to do. If you drag me to something that I don't want to do, I'm not thrilled, I'll go along and plaster a smile on my face, but I'd rather be home writing or in the booth doing my thing.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I'm one of them.
So if you were to write a letter to yourself and send it back in time to when you first started getting into voiceover, what would you tell your past self?
I would say, remember that social media can be a demon and you've got to be careful with that. It's not around yet, but it will be. So you got to watch your P's and Q's. You have to remember when you're online, whatever you say is being heard by many people. Oftentimes, those folks do not share your opinion politically.
It's true.
And so if you're on there ranting one way or another about a candidate or about a policy or what have you, people that will hire you are hearing that or seeing that, and they may or may not hire you based on what you're saying. I would keep it right middle of the road. Do not cross the line. You know, keep it steady as she goes, because you don't know you know, people in power may have a different idea than you do. And if you want them to hire you, you certainly don't want to offend them.
That's true. So, well, yeah. Where can people find you, and where can people find your studio and demo production and all the amazing things that come with Rick Seller?
Well, it's actually Sellers with an S, but
Sellers.
That's okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, yeah, you got it. You can go to richardsellers.com, okay, and you can see lots of different toys, audiobooks for kids that I've done, lots of commercial work. I think the latest commercial I did for Silk Greek yogurt is up running now. It's the yogurt that doesn't require any cows. There's no dairy in it. It's just straight plant-based sort of stuff. But yeah, you can see all the different things that we do and services that I have done and provide. And you can go to the Primo Demos website, which is www.primodemos, P-R-E-M-O, demos, one word, .com. And you can listen to examples of voiceover demos that we've done for talent all over the world, including Australia and Scotland and England and other places as well. So, and those are a little bit different when you're doing an international video game demo, because the sort of the concept has to be appropriate for that particular area, and depending on what it is and, you know, the dialect that the person is speaking in, you kind of have to adapt to that as well. But you can listen to all kinds of examples, you can get pricing information, all kinds of good stuff. And then if you're interested in coaching, hit me up at ricksvoice@aol.com, ricksvoice@aol.com. And I'd be happy to chat with you and explain to you the process and how I work and all that good stuff. So,
well, thanks for coming on, man. This has been a blast.
You got it.
I really hope you enjoyed Rick's magical journey across some of the coolest genres VO has to offer. If you'd like to check out some of his work, his demo productions, or some of the most notorious creature sounds of the decade, you can visit his website at richardsellers.com. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop. For more information on guests, new episodes, and more, be sure to visit www.vocoffeeshop.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.